It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all hustlers with the same interests.
Welcome, everybody. It's John Pollock, Court Bauer. The introductions continue as you click on a show that says Bauer and Pollock, and in your ears are Bauer and Pollock, and yet we introduce ourselves as John Pollock and Court Bauer. How are you, Court?
I'm fine. How are you, Pollock?
I'm doing swell. Swell in Canada. Well, fresh off watching Game 7 of the Cubs and Indians. Did you watch this historical baseball game?
It was.
On Wednesday night, Court.
I did, and it brought me back to watching the Red Sox almost a little over 10 years ago undo the curse that had hit Fenway for decades. And it was cool to see the Cubs, after 108 years, realize their world title. And it was pretty cool to see it. I wish it had happened in Chicago, but there's something magical about Game 7 and it going into extra innings and also having the rain delay. I was like, oh boy, what's going to happen here? And it got dicey down to the last out. It was suspenseful. But I'm also not going to lie. I did fall asleep earlier on the game for a few minutes and woke up and said, okay, the score's still the same. We're good. It was a little power napped because I anticipated this thing was going to go into the wee hours of the morning, and it did. And it did not disappoint. Baseball's – when it's great, it's damn great. And when it's slow, it's damn slow. But it was a lot of fun watching it. And, it's something to be said about having a breather. Baseball's over. Now we can move our attention elsewhere, but then it comes back in the spring. But we have a break, build up interest. And when spring training comes, people are excited just to see these guys half-assed in tropical environments for a few weeks and then hit it hard into late March with the opening of the season. So wrestling, not so much, not like that. But plenty of good wrestling going on 24/7, 360, it seems like, or 365.
Yeah, we're up to 365 now.
Well,
each calendar.
That's good.
Occasionally more. The Indians here losing in Cleveland. I mean, this is just going to reinforce this beating the babyface in their hometown style of booking, I think, for another good decade.
Boy, oh boy. I saw someone get a tattoo on, I think it was on Twitter. They had the Cavaliers and they had the Indians logo and it said 2016 champs.
What? Where was the Stipe Miocic logo?
Well, that would have been actually wiser, given that this guy jumped the gun before the Indians could...
Should have waited.
Yeah, some
probably a whole litany of criticism he's going to get for that Indians logo, not the least of which is the fact that 2016, number two, not number one, but they beat our Blue Jays, so they can at least brag about that.
I try to transition us out of the baseball talking to wrestling. You just doubled right into it. So he's healing on you, listeners, right now. I'm trying to give you wrestling talk.
I was the one who was segueing it to the booking of Sunday. So maybe WWE felt they were ahead of themselves on Sunday with Sasha losing in Boston right before the Indians lost in Cleveland.
You came back strong on that segue. That's the WWE way of doing stuff. They will book someone in their hometown in a deplorable way sometimes, or in Sasha's way, just losing. I mean, ask JR how Oklahoma City's been for him lately. Every time they'd go there throughout his whole tenure, they would find some way to degrade him or downgrade his presence in the hometown. But Vince believes in that type of heat. I think you're.
Oh, and what heat it was for that finish.
Yeah, exactly. I think it diminishes the attraction, diminishes the goodwill with the local market. And I don't think you didn't hear that kind of booing. It was really flat, and there was this weirdness in Boston. And Boston has great heat, historically has great heat. But the wind came out of the sails. And, at the same time, it was three Hell in a Cell matches. varying in quality, but three Hell in a Cell matches. It's a lot. It's a lot. You're on the verge of lockdown level of weirdness, but they tried it. Maybe they won't do it in the next year. I mean, they've fucked with their special attractions, be it Royal Rumble going to a 40-man Rumble once. They try to do different things. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it ends up like that. As long as they learn from these things and don't repeat it, that's cool. We'll see how it goes in 2017. But WWE, you talk about just content and maybe not learning their lesson. And I do love the Cruiserweights, don't get me wrong. And I loved the show that aired this summer. To me, it was my favorite episodic weekly wrestling series of the year. It's going to get my nod for the Observer for TV show of the year. But WWE's adding now the 205 Live show for the Cruiserweights, and that's beginning later this month on the 29th. And it's I wish they had just done this at the end of the tournament, and I think I would have had an appetite for it. But the way they're structuring this is even peculiar, and where they're taping it, what the announced team is, and it's a great announcing team, but there's some weirdness there. What's your take on this new weekly series coming to the WWE Network, as clearly there's a demand for more content?
Is there a demand for more content?
No, but inside WWE, what they have is data. And all the data indicates that people love new content more than, tragically, the archives, which they are slower to roll out. They want new original content. And sometimes that content hits big and sometimes it doesn't. The Cruiserweight special limited edition series this summer hit big. And they also feel like they're trying to still figure out this puzzle that is the Cruiserweight division. And, you know, I applaud them for their effort. I applaud them for trying to do the Cruiserweight division right and not just give up on it and shrug it off. And, I mean, I think there's been some hiccups since it's rolled out, obviously. But they're trying to find a way to showcase it in its own way, in its own manner. I commend them. But the additional content, you know, they're looking at it from just pure data. People want more content. Every survey says that. But there's going to be some winners and some losers. People are going to make selections, and based on that, you know, business is going to go in one way. I don't know. I really don't know. I kind of wish that the Cruiserweight division, of all the places, I wish it hadn't landed on Raw. I wish it had gone either to SmackDown or been a part of NXT, because I think that Full Sail audience was perfect for it. I mean, it's going to be touring apparently as part of the NXT house show loop sometimes. So, I mean, they're already going there with the touring. They had their best crowds for there. And to put it on, they're going to be taping this, I believe, during the SmackDown tapings. They're going to do it right now after the SmackDown tapings end. That might change, as there's always going to be adjustments. Similar to,
no, it can't be with that name, Court. They've kind of married themselves to the live aspect. Are we going to get 205 taped? 205 taped live?
Live. To tape. But, I mean, that's what happened with ECW. Originally, it was depending on market, because here's the other thing. It's not going to be live all the time, because when they go on the West Coast, you can't it's not going to work out that way. You have to tape it. It's going to be all funky. So, yeah, I'm very curious to see how they do this. I think the crowd is going to be really – I mean, look at the Raw crowd. They're very tired, and I get it. They're fatigued. Even if you see all the stars, it's still an endless parade of matches, angles, stars. You've seen it after 3 hours. Same thing's going to happen with the 205, and I worry about, you know, again, lessening and diminishing the attraction of the Cruiserweight division. But it's a financial thing to open up Full Sail again for an additional session of tapings. It's not as cost effective as just carving out time when you're already at the arena and doing it there at SmackDown. But you know, then you're still flying in the talent or having them join you for another day on the road, which they weren't doing. Tell us a little bit about the announced team, though.
The announced team is going to be Mauro Ranallo and Corey Graves, which I think is going to be a great announced team. I think that's going to be one of the factors that people are going to be interested in this. And I think that kind of shows their hand of what they were doing on Sunday of essentially getting those two to broadcast together during the pre-show. Maybe as something as simple as just Vince hearing them together on a broadcast and signing off that this will be the broadcast team for this new Cruiserweight show, which, I mean, didn't come out of left field. This was asked about in that recent survey that came out of the Cruiserweights getting their own show. And you're right, it's pretty much it was marketed as, you know, exclusive to Raw, and it's pretty much it's everywhere but SmackDown now. They're on NXT, they'll be touring with NXT, they'll be on Raw, and now they have their own show on Tuesdays.
And I think there's a problem here, and there's a disconnect for me, because you're taking the SmackDown announcer and putting him on the show. I want a true blue brand split with no one going over to each side. I you can't start doing that, and especially in the infancy of this relaunch of the brand split.
I think this idea of the brand split, it's to me, it's like I've already closed my mind to that element of this. I think they internally have they're not trying at all to try and have this pseudo feud, which is funny because of the Survivor Series setup that they're doing it. Sure. But it just seems like they have like totally thrown in the towel on that when it comes to just the way they promote back and forth. And it seems that I don't look at this brand split as any kind of attempt at doing something to even resemble these warring brands.
Well, I don't
brands.
Want warring brands, but well, I know the mentality inside the creative division and with Vince. Once you start blending and blurring the rosters or the talent, all of a sudden when you have a guy go down to injury, instead of trying to make a new star or find a creative workaround, you just say, let's just call in Randy Orton on Monday Night Raw. And all of a sudden, very quickly, that brand split can collapse. And that's what happened the last time. Once you started to erase those magic lines that said you're a SmackDown guy, you're a Raw guy, and now you have them kind of crossing back and forth, it sounds – oh, we were just talking about announcers. It starts there, and it can go somewhere else. And if you look at the house shows lately, they haven't been performing as well. SmackDown ratings are up. That's really good, and that's one reason they might not do that. But and I think this still is a great announcing team. Now, there's no doubt about it. Great announcing team. You know, and that shows me they're really trying to put their best quality talent out there to make their show the best it can be, which is good. Again, they're doing everything in good faith to pump this division up.
But you're also at this point, I mean, Corey Graves, you're spreading somewhat thin with 3 hours of Raw. He also does Superstars on Mondays, the NXT tapings, now this weekly show. So he's on the road an additional day on Tuesdays. There's only so much this guy can do. I think NXT is something that should probably be taken off his plate when you're adding all of this to him. That's 4 hours he's calling within the span of 24.
And also, NXT should be the training ground for grooming announcers, and it was for Corey Graves, and he became a fantastic announcer. You developed him there, and then you moved him up. It's time to now find someone else for that seat at the NXT table and start grooming them. Yes, it's going to take a step back, but that's the purpose and the point of NXT. And you're going to need to start filling out some of those broadcast roles because
I mean, does that guy come to mind for you?
Does who?
Is it someone to replace Corey Graves?
Is anyone? I know they have people they're looking at inside that, okay, we're earmarking this person to come in and do more of a role in that capacity. But at the same time, you know, you got to let go and let him go into the main roster. I think it's important that Corey Graves, like you said, take some of his work off of his plate, because the thing about the Cruiserweight show that worked during the summer was the fact that they were able to do their due diligence and research, just prep in enough time to convey the stories, tell background stories, get these guys over, make them credible, make them meaningful, get you invested in them. And Daniel Bryan and Mauro did a great job. They're going to have.
I was surprised that was. Sorry to interrupt. I thought that would be the announced team for this Cruiserweight show, given that they are the voices associated with the Cruiserweight Classic. And Bryan is just going to be sitting there after SmackDown, because they're still going to be doing Talking Smack on top of this. And Bryan's just going to be sitting there while Graves is now being utilized another day on top of this. On the road, exactly. So you have Bryan there. He's got the chemistry with Mauro. I thought that if you're going to do this on the Tuesday nights, that commentary team makes sense. And then to your point, it's not sacrificing the credibility of this brand split.
Yeah, I mean, there's some weirdness there. But to that point, I really felt since day one, and I think a lot of listeners did, SmackDown felt like the better place if you're going to move the Cruiserweight division to the main roster. If you had to pick between Raw and SmackDown, I get why they made the decision to go to Raw 3 hours. But SmackDown felt better. And now more than ever, if you look at the depth issues for SmackDown, they need they need a shot in the arm, and that would have really filled out the roster. And also, historically, SmackDown's been the place for the Cruiserweight division. Made sense with Daniel Bryan wanting to, in theory, when the draft went down, bring them in, but the timing wasn't right. Again, we'll see how this works. The 205 live show, like any WWE TV series, they're going to roll out one thing, and over time it's going to adjust, and they're going to make some corrections. They're going to take some creative leaps, and some of it will be successful, some of it will not. I really hope that this show works out. The beauty of the show when we saw it this summer was that it was pre-taped. It wasn't live, which allowed them, if there was a botched spot in a match or something, to edit it.
Or someone forgets what the count is on the floor.
10, 20, whatever, doing it Japanese style. But it also, for the announcers, if they bust a line, and every announcer does, even the best, you have the magic of post-production. You don't have that here. Not that I'm worrying about Mauro or Corey or anything, but it just allows them to have more QC. I would have gone to the original format, but it might be a matter of economics, and maybe they're concerned that if they do too much in Orlando, you risk fatigue. I can see that argument, and you might have that at some point where it's just like, okay, we've had enough. Look what happened to TNA. They had amazing fan base, even though it was all free tickets. Still had an amazing fan base, but after a while, there was fatigue. And you become, you've seen it all. You become numb to it. And there's a balancing act to that. How much do you want to put out there, even if they're a diehard, hardcore audience, an awesome audience, how much do you want to put out there?
Well, let's move on to TNA because today – Anthem Sports and Entertainment put out a press release updating the situation involving Billy Corgan and the structure of the company, and I'm just going to read some of this. Anthem Sports and Entertainment Corp and Impact Ventures, parent company of TNA Impact Wrestling, today announced that Anthem has provided a credit facility to TNA to fund operations. Anthem Sports and Entertainment is a global sports media company that operates Fight Network, Impact Wrestling's exclusive broadcaster in Canada. And I'll skip here. The agreement includes the appointment of Anthem Executive Vice President Ed Nordholm to the Impact Ventures Board of Managers. The company will be managed by the board, with Mr. Nordholm representing the board on all major operating and restructuring decisions. Dixie Carter will continue as chair of the company, as well as her position on the board of managers. Billy Corgan is no longer with the company. And since then, Billy Corgan has written on Twitter, "Fact. TNA was supposed to pay me 2 days ago.
Can you
please
read this as Billy?
No. Oh. Which they swore to in front of a judge. Yesterday they asked for a day to get money together, upon which they'd reach out directly to settle all claims, so they lied again and have used the time as a weapon. Fact, I have still not been paid, and I'm exploring all remedies, including new filings with court and converting to 36% equity." I imagine he means new filings in a place of law and not you directly, Mr. Corp.
No comment.
So from this, we gather that, from what I understand, is that Aerolux and Jason Brown, who has been installed as the guy who's running the day-to-day operations of this. Anthem is essentially going to be funding this, and it seems, Court, like Dixie Carter, it's very much just a figurehead position that she holds in the wake of this.
Right.
And Billy Corgan is going to continue to fight this and has obviously not been paid back his loan and now wants to turn it into a percentage of the company as one of his options that he could explore.
He's trying to interpret his agreement to his advantage, which everyone's right when they do this. He's also going to accumulate some decent legal fees. So at a certain point, he might say, what's the risk versus the reward here? He's pursuing it. He's also burning up all this money and legal fees. At what point do you realize this dog ain't going to hunt for you? I don't know. But it would seem like TNA is now pivoting and saying they're stabilizing. We're good. We're set. We're whole. And now we are correcting our course. Will they? Can they? With Dixie there, a lot of people have their doubts. A lot of people in the company, in the locker room, have taken to social media to share their thoughts and their lack of enthusiasm. I really don't know her position. It's seemingly day to day, it's diminished considerably. I don't like or feel comfortable with her being tagged as an officer that has some sort of participation in the strategic logistics of the business. That seems like, of all places to put her, not the best place, but that might just be in title. Sometimes that's what it is. So the proof will be in the pudding. They have a great roster. They have a lot of enthusiastic fans that have been just so excited to see something on the horizon that looks positive. And 2017 is going to be another another challenge for them, because they lost challenge in the United Kingdom, a key TV deal, and a relatively lucrative deal by TNA standards. They still have India, and they have a barter deal here in the United States, but they need to find revenue. And something I talked with Eric Bischoff about, and he has interesting insight on it because he was in the trenches there, and you know, with the whole WCW thing, I think he kind of understands what you need and what you don't need, and if you don't have it, what's going to happen. We talked about it on MLW Radio on Tuesday, and they need to find distribution, and maybe their affiliation somehow, some way, they can backdoor international distribution via the Fight Network's contacts. And I'm not trying to put you in an awkward position, but you know, Fight Network obviously has a growing presence internationally. They're in a lot of key markets, and they're going to, I'm sure, try to get more and more. Maybe there's something they can do to work out a deal there. However, you know, I could also see Fight Network trying to do an overall deal to have TNA as a part of the Fight Network package. And so maybe the, you know, it's a value package, and it's a different representation. There's a million ways this can happen internationally.
Yeah.
You know, so I can come up with like 20 scenarios, and they're all confusing probably to people that are in the international distribution business. But there's ways to find money, and how much versus how little. It all depends on
the
nature.
The question, though, becomes, Court, is what? How much stock do you put into the current perception of TNA? Are we in so deep in the weeds following this day by day that executives overseas are not as deep into this? Because you look at this and the problems you can see, the lawsuits that pop up on an almost daily basis. I mean, is this an attractive property still if you are an overseas television company that's looking to get into wrestling? Is this still something attractive, that it's producing content and that you'd want to get in on?
Oh, they really need to do a refresh on the company, if not a whole reset on the company. And the international TV community, it's international. It's huge, yet word travels quickly. And losing the Challenge deal and the reasons behind Challenge's reason for killing deal, that does spread. If Sony or their India deal starts to crumble, that's gonna be a domino effect, and I think that's gonna diminish value. It's gonna hurt their prestige as a international content.
India is the big one.
That is the big one.
They also have one in South Africa with Super Sport. That's what I was alluding to a few weeks ago, but wasn't 100% sure. But it is a deal that they have that I understand is a long-term deal. It's not up anytime soon. So they have that. Those are the two deals remaining now, with Challenge out of the picture, and then, of course, the Fight Network in Canada.
So they have to, because this Challenge can turn into a domino effect. And India has a lot of reasons that they can look to in their agreement for a breach of contract right now, and 86 them. They're in a very fragile, precarious position when it comes to their India deal and when it comes to their international business. They have to stabilize. Now, financially, they're doing it, and they can only do so much in a day and in a week and in a month. But they have to make those inroads. They have to correct their course. And it's going to take a lot of work. And the beauty is, though, they can focus on it over the next 2 months, because they don't really have anything they have to shoot until January. They're going to do the Hardy thing, but that's it's a simplistic setup. It really is for what they're going to be doing. So in the meantime, they can focus on this, and now they have to do what every company does when they're in these tough situations. They have to reorganize internally and restructure the company and find whatever the weak links are, identify them, and replace them. And that's going to be interesting to see where guys like John Gaberick fall. The creative team. I think the roster is fantastic. I would be concerned if they started to screw around with that too much. but we'll see.
And the show's been pretty good as of right now. Yes. The show is not the issue, and that to me, I mean, when
it's
you
fine.
Are trying,
let me put it this way, it's fine. It's not game changing, big money angle stuff that's wrong. They're doing, I find when you watch a show, you're satisfied. You're not saying, oh my god, I'll never get those 2 hours back in my life. It's fine, you know. In some weeks,
but that's
it's very
also
entertaining.
Not. That's also not the game at this point. It's like solid creative, and I feel
stabilize. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. And I feel that there's a lot of fans that they looked at Billy Corgan as something different. It's like, okay, we've had this losing team for so many seasons. This is the new head coach to come in, and at least he has a new vision for it. But I don't know what Billy Corgan's plans were, and if you're just looking at him coming in with a fresh creative vision, I don't think a fresh creative vision is turning TNA around, Court. It's all these other issues of finding platforms, better deals. And to me, great creative, that might increase your viewership a bit, but that's not going to turn this around.
Don't get hot about it, but what I'm saying is culturally they have to change it from top to bottom. You have to have a different corporate culture there. You can't keep the status quo or you're still in quicksand. And that touches on every level of that company, every aspect of that company. And if they don't look at it with a holistic approach, they're going to repeat a lot of the same mistakes. But all this, it's all theory. You can't judge and you can't assess until now you see what they do. They're just pivoting. They're trying to cleanse themselves of their legal entanglements, of their Billy Corgan situation. And now we see what happens in the next 2 months. You may not see anything on the surface for a month or two. You might, if they're doing their work, it shouldn't be in front of us. And, someone like Dixie on Twitter touting what's happening. It should be a quiet, slow, gradual thing if it's going to be done right. They shouldn't be trying to flex. They should just correct everything, reassure their partners, and stabilize. And that goes into every division. And even the little things like their website and looking at their Shop TNA section where, you see T-shirts that are listed at $24, discounted at $4. Why even put $24 at all? Just say the shirts are, a holiday sale or a fall sale. $4.99. I mean, it's just little things. They have to look at everything they're doing, from marketing to consumer goods, everything, and try to make this thing look less desperate and look like a slicker, sexier machine, because no one likes a desperate wrestling promotion. No one does.
We have a ton of topics to get to. This is
You are looking at your Google Doc that looks rather nice, especially at the top.
You guys need to be following this in real time because Cord is like crossing through topics as we are discussing them.
I'm on fire.
This is very interactive. Yes. Let us move on to actually just following off the end of our TNA discussion. A few performers did kind of discuss the ruling earlier this week with the judge in Nashville in favor of TNA. Mike Bennett was the one who posted a public statement noting, "Welp, back to business as usual." And then Maria Kanellis noting that she is looking to get out of professional wrestling next spring. And then Davey Richards also noting that he's going to be winding things down in 2017. Not the first time that Davey Richards has stated that he will be leaving professional wrestling, but perhaps he too may be ending his career.
He's got a young family, and when you have a child, it changes everything. Your perspective, your willingness to do certain things, to be on the road, to put your body on the line for financial stability reasons. You just start to look at things and analyze things differently. You're not just looking at the here and now or a year from now. You're looking at 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road and your obligations to your family. And in the case of Maria, I mean, she was talking about getting out of the business years ago. I remember talking with her about it, and she was, she went back to school. She's been focused on this for a while. This isn't like just some indictment or any knock on TNA. This is something she was looking at down the road, and I think it's a healthy thing for all people in the business to realize there is a last stop, and then you have to get off and make a new life for yourself. And it's a very hard transition. But I think for Maria, she's got her good head on her shoulders. I mean, to be thinking like that, and she just got recently married. She's going on to her master's. I think that's a great, healthy thing. to be thinking like that. And it's not like, oh, screw the business, move on, but to have a realistic understanding of the shelf life of someone in the business. And if you can extend that by some means, good, great. But if it's time, then it's time. And so she already has a date in her mind where it's her expiration date and she's moving on. So, you know, I wish her the best with it. She's very talented. So is Bennett. And Bennett just, man, I think he's just getting started. I'd like to see more from him.
The Undertaker is being advertised for the 900th episode of SmackDown on November the 15th in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, which is the same site where Vince's limo exploded. As the dead man returns here on November 15th, and we will see if he is actually on the show, if it is just for the live crowd in which he appears. But this is definitely going to fuel speculation, Court, that he is going to do WrestleMania again next year.
It is in such a weird market, all respect to Wilkes-Barre, but having worked a SmackDown in that market.
You're going to upset a lot of people with what you say next.
It's not like the Garden. You know, it's such a peculiar place. It'll sell out, and I'm sure it'll do great for Undertaker to return. But I guess 900 is just a number. But it's interesting that he was just recently brought in to do the Cavaliers had asked for some very big names to be involved. Just one of they listed like three or four as on their wish list to WWE to participate in the opening tip-off for the Cavs as the 2016 champion. See what I did, bringing it back to the Cleveland conversation. And Undertaker was on that list, and he went ahead and did it right after having his hip surgery not too far before that. So to see him back doing something for the 900th SmackDown, pretty cool. And for Wilkes-Barre, they're getting a hell of a bonus because the dead man doesn't pop up too often. And is this a one-off, or do you set the table for an angle that triggers something for WrestleMania? And if you look at, well, who's on SmackDown, AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, John Cena probably is not going to be there. Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt, Luke Harper, maybe a younger star that maybe they see they can give the rub to. And now they seldom actually effectively pull it off right now, unfortunately. But what would your WrestleMania 33 prospects be for an Undertaker opponent at this point? Are you looking at big money or big return down the road when it comes to developing a star that's going to be around for 10 to 15 years? Or are you just cashing in those chips and you putting him against another legend or part-timer or guy that's already over?
My short list would be John Cena, mm-hmm. AJ Styles, or Bill Goldberg for WrestleMania. I don't see anything in a Harper or Bray Wyatt feud. I don't see them redoing Bray at this point. Randy Orton really doesn't grab my interest, although I guess that's a possibility now. I mean, does that do it for you? Randy Orton and The Undertaker at WrestleMania?
Been there, done that.
That's what it feels like. And beyond that, Dean Ambrose, for me, there was so much that could have been done with him this past year at WrestleMania. And to do it this year with The Undertaker, I feel it would be a very similar scenario where it would be Dean Ambrose ultimately losing to The Undertaker. I don't see them utilizing Undertaker in that role to make somebody by him losing again at WrestleMania. I think The Undertaker is at this point now where it's dream matches and it's matches that they would likely book Undertaker to go over in. And that is where I look at my options as being, and maybe AJ Styles then falls into that cat. I mean, I'd love to see the match. I just love to see the dynamics of it between those two. But for me, I would go with either Goldberg and Undertaker, and you market it around the two biggest streaks in wrestling colliding. Although that's
– we'd have to get Goldberg on a big streak here.
But do you feel Goldberg – we were going to talk about this. Is this – do you just cash in on this one match with Lesnar? Do you think there's more on the table, or should this be it?
First of all, my pick would be Shinsuke Nakamura versus Undertaker. And bringing Nakamura up to SmackDown, but don't think that's going to happen necessarily in that way. Goldberg, I think it's a wait and see. I don't know still why you'd put him against Brock. It's big money. It's also a clunky match. But by design right now, the intention is a one-off. And so you'd imagine if it's a one-off and Brock being the world's baddest man on the planet, or the best man on the planet, he he should beat this guy. In a typical match, he ragdolls the other guy. It's going to be weird to see a 10-12 minute match where that happens. If it's a little back and forth, I just hope Bill can temper his enthusiasm and not be careful, you know?
This one's really going to be on whoever is in charge of producing this match and building it around these.
That poor guy.
I mean, it is a tough match to put together in 2016 where you've got to do all those suplex spots. And I mean, Bill is 49 years old and, you know, it wasn't exactly graceful on Monday night with Rusev either. And it's one of those matches where everyone remembers the last one. And I think that the audience is going to totally be into both guys for the entrances and when it starts. But if they start to sense it going sour in the ring, I think they'll be quick to flip the switch on these two.
It's possible. It's possible. There's three different options you have for something like this is to keep it short, real short, which I think would be kind of shitty. Like, you
know, does this have to go on last?
It all depends on what you do in the match and how you lay it out and what's your finish. Because based on that, it kind of dictates where it should be for a few reasons. But either this match is going to be a short match, real short, which would be the classic Brock Lesnar ragdoll, or to me, the third option, which is probably the best option, is to do the smoke and mirrors. It's what you saw with Hunter and Sting, and you've seen in, you know, the worst version was the Hart family, Bret Hart versus Vince at a WrestleMania long ago, where you just have all these kind of weird shenanigans outside. But and maybe that's why they introduced Rusev on Monday night, is now you can conveniently backdoor him into something during the match. And I'm not opposed to that, because maybe it leads to
a house show in Mexico City.
We'll get to that in a moment. But Bill Goldberg doing something at the Rumble or the next month at TLC and gets him into another storyline. It gets him away from Brock Lesnar, gets Brock Lesnar away from Bill Goldberg, because we should not tempt fate with this one. But you're talking about Mexico City, and they have a big show coming up December 3rd at the a beautiful new arena, state-of-the-art arena in the city of Mexico, or Mexico City, I should say, Ciudad de Mexico Arena, and it's beautiful. I mean, Triple Mania's been there. It's a gorgeous, I mean, by American standards, any standards, it's a beautiful, beautiful arena. And they'll be doing a house show there with Brock Lesnar making his debut in Mexico. Well, I don't think he'll be doing any lucha spots, along with Paul
Heyman. He's going to come out in that sombrero. Remember when he was feuding with Eddie Guerrero?
Yes, I do. Very interesting to see that they brought him there, but their houses have been soft in Mexico. Very soft, from what I've been told by my friends south of the border. Like, really soft. Like, people aren't even aware of how soft they've been recently. So this will hopefully pump it up, because WWE, when they go to Mexico, they have a partner when they tour there for a lot of reasons. And they got to make good on this, because they want to continue a relationship. They want to continue to have a presence in Mexico.
So from there, do you want to chat about Hulk Hogan?
Okay, brother.
He reached his Gawker settlement this week for a reported $31 million stemming from the sex tape and the clip of which Gawker did post back in 2012. And at the end of all of this, it's a giant settlement. It's not the $140 million that was ruled in his favor.
Yep.
But Court, how much of this do you imagine Hogan actually gets out of this settlement?
Oh, I don't know what his arrangement is with Thiel, and that will shape this. I mean, Hogan's not just doing it to do it. He's going to make his money. Thiel doesn't need the money, but he's going to get reimbursed to some extent. And you also have lawyers, which will be a theme. Like we talked about Billy Corgan, lawyers are going to probably make out the best in this, because it's been a long-running trial and a lot of legal actions involved. So the winners here are the lawyers. That's usually the case with things. And I'm not knocking lawyers. That's what they're supposed to do. So don't get hot at me, lawyers. But, you know, now I think it's going to be interesting beyond the Gawker case, is that now you look at Hulk Hogan. And I do know for a fact that he has taped stuff for the WWE network. So is that a casual, as casual can get relationship? Or now that this is Gawker business, will they go full on and consider having him drive up I-4 for WrestleMania 33 in Orlando. Not to wrestle per se, just, you know, the Hulkster's back in the family fold. They're going to have to be very careful if they do that, in fact. But, you know, to have him be a talking head on some WWE Network content, which is what I understand basically.
Oh, he can host Raw Talk.
Oh, brother. But, I mean, what do you think about Hulk Hogan in any capacity having any representation in any WWE programming, be it, like I just said, it's the talking head stuff he shot or anything else?
I fully expect him to at some point to be brought back into the family. I don't know if there's necessarily the value that they internally believe there may be in Hulk Hogan, and maybe they don't. Maybe they feel that of all of this negative publicity and the all of the tape recordings that we heard last summer, maybe it's just they totally see this as not worth the risk because he can't do a match. We did the whole Hulk Hogan coming back tour in 2014, and he came back and he was in the ambassador role, and doing that all over again, but now with the negative attention that he's garnered for himself, I don't know what there really is in a Hulk Hogan comeback other than it's not like he's someone that you can bring in and you can send out to do all of the charity stuff and be your brand ambassador. I don't think that's a role he can facilitate anymore.
Well, yeah, great point, because when he was brought back, it was to do that kind of stuff, hit the 999 WWE Network. Now you get to see me in my glory and all. Well, I shouldn't say that with the sex tape stuff out there. If you put him out there in the media, the messaging for WWE gets all fucked up because it's going to be a...
That's going to come up in so many different...
Your takeaway won't be WWE's doing all these great things with their content and here's what they're selling for WrestleMania. It's to be like, oh, so there's all that shit that went down and all, you know, all the questions about the Gawker case, Bubba the Love Sponge, his wife, then all these... It's like there's so much of a circus there that it's just like your messaging is going to be so diluted and forgotten and lost, even if he does the best job to try to bring it back on point. There's no way. And then you got the racist stuff that came out. That's a big freaking topic that cannot be ignored and shouldn't be.
Well, that to me is the big deal. To me, it's like the sex tape is embarrassing, but I don't think anyone is offended. It's all the racist stuff.
I think that is
something that he'll never fully be able to shake off. There's no way. And that is what you're getting into business with. I mean, if they see a value in bringing him back, you know, yeah, you can use him as a talking head on the network. You know, he's still recognizable. He's still going to get a reaction if he shows up. But in terms of a role within the company, how do you send this guy out on your behalf and endorse him in a public way?
And also, there's going to be people in your own company and your fans and your partners that are going to, because like you said, the racist comments are going to be like so uncomfortable with you being in bed with this guy. You know, your own employees, you know, your own even high-level executive team might be offended. It's Pandora's box. But I think they're going to test this in a very strategic way, as they can at times be. And we'll see this, probably the Hulk Hogan talking heads start to pop up, and the pushback will be interesting. Will there be? Or do wrestling fans at the end of the day just want stars, and they are the most forgivable bunch of fans you'll ever find? I don't know.
Donald Trump had a...
Well, there's a segue.
Donald Trump had some news come up this week tying himself, the WWE Network of all places, outing him for a possible relationship with former crime boss Robert Labuddy, who for years Trump had said he did not really know who this guy was, stating, hey, if he was right in front of me, I wouldn't recognize him. Well, someone dug up the footage from WrestleMania 4 of all places, and there in the front row is Donald Trump, and two seats over is Robert Labuddy, who had brought his daughter, and she has told this reporter at Yahoo that they were invited guests of Trump, and Labuddy, a very unsavory fellow, if you want to read up on him. He is deceased now, but this was just all worlds colliding, Court, and the WWE Network of all places exposing Donald Trump and here in close proximity of one Robert LaBuddy.
Yeah. WrestleMania 4 being the stage for this is given this race, this election.
Trump didn't pay attention to the tagline at the time. What the world is watching.
No shit. Very interesting times we live in. But, we'll see what happens in less than 7 days.
I'm so excited for this election to be done, Court, and I'm not even American.
I might not be American soon either. This election's terrifying.
I think you and I should meet up Tuesday night in the middle of Times Square and just watch it all unfold. I'm excited that I'm actually going to be there for this election.
Well, hell, you should come over to the Bauer compound and ring in the new era of America here at Casa de Bauer. We'll have all the TVs running, all the networks here. We'll have our own control center. We can do some podcasting, give people political updates. Probably not a great idea, but invitations there. I wonder if we'll see the Donald if, in fact – do people call him the Donald now or is he just called a lot of other things? I wonder if we'll see Trump at WrestleMania 33, another – Hulk Hogan and Trump just should roll up together. Wow, that's a – well, that's a two-headed monster right there. I wonder if Vince – you know Vince is going to make that call in the next few months.
Do you expect anything Monday night, any heavy-handed political messaging on Raw Monday before the election? Because they've been completely quiet on the election throughout this, and that has not always been the case with WWE when it comes to elections.
Oh, I think especially on Tuesday, which will be the show no one's paying attention to, they'll do something. Monday, maybe. But I think Tuesday, it's like, man, that will be the show that the world is not watching. And I don't blame anyone, even if you're not in America, because it's going to be a tough one to go up against. And I'm curious to see how they book that show. We'll probably be seeing a lot of tag team matches and stuff of zero consequence.
Some Japanese notes. Pro Wrestling Noah was sold earlier this week. And we've also got Power Struggle happening this Saturday, headlined by Tetsuya Naito against Jay Lethal, along with the Time Bomb going off court. For Pro Wrestling Noah, hopefully this is something that is stabilizing for the promotion. And I mean, I don't know too much about the company that has financed Pro Wrestling Noah, but this will at least hopefully help them.
Well, yeah, the company that's financing them, tech company from out in Japan. And, the owner actually put on Twitter a picture in his office. He had placed a picture of Mitsuharu Misawa, the founder, the driving force behind Pro Wrestling Noah for many years until his untimely demise in the ring. Horrible, horrible moment in wrestling. And so he put out a picture right above his desk or to the side of his desk. On the wall is Mitsuharu Misawa as the champ, as the man. So he's enthusiastic. This deal is brokered by All Japan Pro Wrestling, a former president, I believe, of All Japan Pro Wrestling. I might be getting the title wrong, but for a lot of people that are Noah fans, they're optimistic that what happened with Bushiroad when they acquired New Japan, when it was a downtrodden time for the company, it was tough, and they've revived it and breathed new life into it, that the same can happen with Noah. And I have a feeling that the collaboration between the two companies is coming to an end very soon. And
could this be Time Bomb related?
That's an interesting point. It seemed to me that you have to start shutting things down and move everyone back. And for New Japan to get some of these guys back that were doing duty for Noah, probably about right now. You need these guys back in the mix. But how do these guys factor in? Some of them we know are a lot. They're easy to program in now. Some of them are going to be kind of lost in the shuffle. I wonder if hopefully they can still retain their jobs, but we'll see. Noah's going to need talent. Part of Noah's deal too is they're gonna try to move away from being so dependent on Tokyo in 2017. And how they do this, we'll see, because that can go two ways. You go away, maybe there's demand for you to come into other markets. Maybe they're going to have bought shows, sponsors, et cetera, to help take them out of Tokyo for a reason. It remains to be seen, but they're going to have to really pump up the talent. And like TNA, kind of do not a, maybe a radical reset like TNA, but a refresh to make this brand feel less of of an abandoned amusement park, which is kind of what's felt over the last few years. I mean, you see the Misawa colors everywhere, and I love it. And you remember what it once was with Kenta Kobashi and everyone at their, I don't know if they're pinnacle, but still kicking ass. And now what it's become, and there's great talent there, but just there's a lot of ghosts at a Noah show, and it kind of haunts the company.
Well, and someone that is tied to both Pro Wrestling Noah and is on the Power Struggle card this weekend is ACH.
Mm.
He's going to be in the Junior Heavyweight Tournament Finals, teaming with Taiji Ishimori against RPG Vice, Rocky Romero, and Trent Beretta. And Court, it looks like among the promotions he will be working for into the new year, Ring of Honor, not one of them.
Yeah, and I think as the end of the year approaches, one of the things the book at Ring of Honor was really keen on was having these year-to-year contracts that mirrored or mimicked New Japan, which does January to January. And there's now New Japan's changed that because of Nakamura and Gallows, Anderson, everyone leaving. They now are doing longer-term contracts. So they're getting away from that old tradition when, you know, back in the day that was fine, but now it's a different world. Ring of Honor has that annual January to January. That's what they aspire for. I think it's really I think it's December to December for most mm-hmm. of them. Some of them are a little off because of when they were executed. But at the end of the year, you could look conceivably for departures from guys like the Young Bucks. They're up next for a renewal. Adam Cole, who I know WWE wants, loves, and would sign up along with the Young Bucks if, you know, the money's right. Because, you know, the Young Bucks do very well with merch, with all their dates. But I'm sure if they're going to do it, this kind of is the time to pull the trigger and take maybe a leap of faith. ACH is a great talent. I think he would be a great get for New Japan, for Noah, for Lucha Underground. I think ACH is following the footsteps of other guys that have recently left and opted to go free agent. Roderick Strong, Cedric Alexander. And like I said, I think there could be more on the horizon. And, of course, internally at Sinclair, they're going to spin this as he was fired and all this. But you know, there's always two sides to the story, and everyone's going to try. Promotions are going to always try to have the upper hand and position themselves a certain way. And I get that as a former promoter. You don't want to look like someone's leaving you, and you don't want the narrative to be that you can't even count on one hand how many guys have opted out instead of doubling down because the narrative is not one that's flattering. So ACH, he's going to test the free agent market. I think he's going to find similar success to Strong and Alexander. He's at the right age to make that move too. You know, and you don't want to do this when you're banged up. You want to do it when you're fresh. And he's doing some great work. If you've seen his stuff, his tag team act, it's really good in Japan. If he wants to just go there, if he wants to go stateside, he's got some options. I would definitely see him in Lucha Underground, which is revving up for another season soon. And with Ricochet now looking beyond Lucha Underground, they need some new dynamic flyers, and ACH, definitely one of them.
He's going to be fine. He's a really great talent, and you know, not surprising that he's leaving ROH. It seems like both sides, it probably was time to move on for both of them. But looking a year from now, and we'll finish off on this court, as you envision the outside WWE scene, I can see demand and the ability for a lot of outside talent to be making really good money over the next year. And I think it's contingent on a lot of things, a lot of these promotions being stable. If Flow Slam, for instance, gets into the business of signing certain wrestlers to be exclusive to their properties, if a Flow Slam was able to offer a big money offer to an act like the Bucks, for instance, I mean, it would benefit them to get into that business where you are signing guys. And I don't know if that's a direction they're going to be willing to take, but I think a year from now, it's going to be real interesting because yes, there's going to be the WWE is always going to be filling up spots in NXT and for the new Cruiserweight show, but all these other promotions have to get talent as well. And they want to grow, and exclusive deals are going to be pretty common, I expect.
And I could see the Young Bucks as another example. They could go to Lucha Underground, and that would still allow them, like Ricochet, to work New Japan, work outside dates, get their guaranteed money, and work with a lot of the friends that they've made from each of the companies they've worked, and have fun. And I know that they're guys that have definitely been on the list, and they've been engaged by Lucha Underground's office. Of course, you know, the Young Bucks went public with how they felt about the offer. And so hopefully there's a lesson learned by Lucha Underground. They come back with something that's compelling if they do engage these guys. It's going to be interesting also when you look at Ring of Honor in a year from now. Are they making stars that are going to be viable, bankable, that stand on their own without New Japan possibly, or even with New Japan as a crutch, and with more of these guys leaving? Have they even accomplished that now if they do lose, hypothetically, the guys we've mentioned? Do they have they done their work to build new stars to be the next crop of talent on top, the next generation? Have they created a bridge to get these guys over? And we'll find out in 2017 how Ring of Honor's business is, and have they repopulated the roster with viable talent. And, you know, there's a lot of competition. So when there's a lot of competition, look in the free agent market, you're going to have to put out better money, or you're going to have to look within to their own Ring of Honor dojo for talent. And maybe some of the solution for Ring of Honor is taking the Women of Honor and following the footsteps of UFC, WWE, and a lot of other places, and showcase the women on the main shows. And maybe the women, surprise, surprise, can be some of your biggest, if not your biggest, stars in 2017. It'd be a radical departure for Ring of Honor, but maybe radical is what they need right now.
Core, what is happening this week in MLW? You have a new addition to the network of podcasts.
A little baby, actually. A little baby boy named Eric Bischoff joined the family. And Bischoff on Wrestling each and every Wednesday, along with Ric Flair Show every Wednesday night, joining the likes of Kevin Sullivan, who has a podcast with MSL, Jim Cornette, MVP, Bruce Pritchard. It's a pretty decent roster if we had a wrestling company. All we need is a ring, but yeah, we have a few new.
Should people read into that?
No, I don't think anyone wants to see Bruce Pritchard wrestle Jim Cornette. So probably not.
I don't know about that. I think Cornette, there's a number of opponents you could line up for him and people would be very interested.
You can just go through a drive through Jim Cornette. That's going to main event a lot of towns. Jim Cornette can, you know, get you into anything pretty much. But, you know, we have a lot going on. We have history in the making right now out looking at El Santo. Our resident historian, Matt Farmer, takes us through the 1930s all the way through the 80s and even into now with the new generation, Nieto del Santo, the grandson of El Santo, now starting to work more and more. So we look at El Santo today on History in the Making. Jim Cornette's out with the show, new show this morning, and Eric Bischoff had Colt Cabana on his show yesterday, and Ric Flair had Torrey Wilson on last night talking about Vince McMahon, WCW, A-Rod, and Heat with Sable, a.k.a. Mrs. Lesnar. And then on Tuesday's show, we had Eric Bischoff on the flagship show for MLW Radio. We have added a hot seat, and we'll be having various hosts and personalities from MLW making it through on a weekly basis as we get some different opinions from the world of MLW. We hope to have you on. In fact, maybe when you come through next week, that's a perfect opportunity if you're not in Times Square going wild over the results of the election.
If I can swing it, I will. This media schedule for UFC is insanity. But we will try and do this show together next week, as we will be in very close proximity. And up at liveaudiowrestling.com, we too have an interview up with Eric Bischoff, who is on the Law from this past Sunday, chatting with Dan Lavransky. We have all our regular review shows of Raw, SmackDown, NXT. The MMA report is also up. And this weekend, you can tune into the Law. It will be myself and Dan Lavransky, midnight Eastern time. We're going to be joined by Chris Jericho on the show to chat about his current run in the WWE. And he's going to share his thoughts on the state of TNA. So that is happening Sunday night, midnight Eastern. You can listen live at liveaudiowrestling.com. And we're doing a contest, which continues this Sunday night, where you can win the chance to not only get tickets to ringside with Jim Ross here in Toronto, but also to have dinner with The Law and Jim Ross the night before, prior to TakeOver. So a very crazy weekend coming up in Toronto in a few weeks, and lots of different events happening in the city. But we will be back next week, hopefully chatting in person as I go to find Court Bauer and the Bauer compound.
Sounds like a plan.